let's get into it. So tonight we're looking at John 4, and our series has been going through John lately, looking at how to find life. Tonight we're going to look at the fact that Jesus proves himself. So in a world of so many different religions and belief systems, Jesus proves himself. He proved himself to this woman in Samaria, and he proves himself to us today. So I want to try and persuade you that Jesus wants to prove himself to us and to every single human being individually. So tonight I want to look at three points. Our need for proof, the proof that Jesus gave this woman, and the proof that Jesus gives us. So one, we need our need for proof. Two, proof Jesus gives this woman. And three, the proof that Jesus gives us. So one, our need for proof. We are intellectual beings, right? We are smart. We are creative. We make decisions for ourselves. And we want to have this responsibility and take this responsibility to make our own decisions, to think for ourselves. And the direction that we want to head in life and decisions that we make are usually based on what we feel is best for us, what we feel is real, what we can understand, what is tangible. And there's no way that we're going to give our time and our money and our values and our beliefs to something that we can't prove, or to something that we think is just not real and a complete waste of time. We don't want to waste our lives. So we look in the world and we try to figure out, well, what's true and what's not true? What's real and what's not real? What's really going to benefit me and what's really going to get me ahead? And there's all of these different options that we've got to try to sort through, and we've got to try to figure out what is true and what's going to benefit me and what am I going to invest my life in. And our beliefs are not easily swayed. If someone walked up to you in Woolies while you were getting some milk or something, and they said to you, hey, I'm God, worship me. You know, I mean, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Does anyone want to chuck out something that they think, if that happened, what would they do? Yep, okay. And who would that psychologist be? In training? Yeah, that's right. Just give him my card. Yeah, that's right. Okay, so Gav, that's pretty good. Gav would respectfully just go, hey man, you know, maybe you should see a shrink. You've got some problems. Some other people might be like, yeah, sure, no worries, maybe some other time, just a bit busy doing my shopping, whatever. But there's no way that if someone just came up to you off the street and just said, hey, I'm God, worship me, are you just going to chuck out your whole life, everything that you believe, and just go after it? You want proof. You want evidence. You've got these beliefs, and you want a reason to change. You're not just going to go with whatever people say. And people talk a lot, and we can talk a lot, and people say, hey, Allah is God, worship him. Or people say, hey, Jesus is God, worship him. But where's the proof? You know, where's the evidence? What would make you actually change your life to follow someone else or to join a religion? We want proof. I did a quick search of world religions on the net. I came across this organisation which does religious statistics, and they said that there are over 43,000 religions and sects. 43,000. That's amazing. I scrolled down and the page, you know, with all the A's, it was like 2,000 A's, and I got really bored of it. But I found a few really quirky and funky religions. I think one was the world's peace religion. One was the Jedi Knights of the Round Table, registered religion. Another one was, I think it was, I should have written this down. It was like the Confederation of Intergalactic Space Travelers. You know, as a registered religion. Now, if someone from the Confederation of Intergalactic Space Travelers just came up to you and he was like, you know, greetings, Earthling. You should join our religion. You'd just be like, yeah, cool, you know, maybe not today, man. I've just got some stuff to do. If you can prove to me that that's legit, then yeah, sure, but probably not. So we struggle because there are so many different options to base our life on. So we struggle to figure out what's real, you know, what's not real, what are we going to base our life on? And we demand evidence. And a person in my life recently who really had this attitude was a guy called Gary. He was my boss. So I study at uni at the moment. I just finished a trade just at Dakabin, just on the Ringbar Road. A guy called Gary's my boss. And this guy, he wanted proof. And because he wanted proof, he hated religion. Well, he didn't so much hate religion, but he absolutely hated religious people. And he hated people who don't shut up about their religion as the truth and people, you know, preaching to him. He just hated it. So we weren't allowed to bring it up at lunchtime. We weren't allowed to talk about it. We weren't allowed to question it. There was just absolutely no religious talk. He just tried to shut it down straight away. And there was a guy working there at that time, and he went out with Gary in the truck, and he was delivering furniture. And he just brought it up, and he said, you know, Gary, what do you think about this, mate? What do you think about God? What do you think about religion? What is your opinion? What do you believe, you know? And after some discussion with Gary, Gary just said, look, mate, anyone can talk, okay? Anyone can talk. Anyone can say stuff. The world is full of debates and arguments and religious discussion. I want to see proof. I want to see it change someone's life. I want to see this. I want to see it led by example, you know? And until someone can actually just stop talking and just prove it to me, there's no way I'm going to give up what I believe. And that was such an insight that that's the way that we really are, that we want this proof, we want this tangible evidence. And otherwise, we're not going to give up and just go believe something else. And I was very much like Gary. When I was at high school, so in about year 9, I wanted proof. And I grew up in a Christian household, but I wanted absolutely nothing to do with God. I really hated going to church. I thought it was all about, you know, you can't play PlayStation on Sunday, you can't get drunk, and no sex before marriage. And that is not what it's about. I'm not advocating that's what it's about, but that's what I thought anyway. And so I wanted those things, so I didn't want anything to do with it. And I remember in year 9, I was reading through my science textbook at the time, and I read about evolution, and I read about the Big Bang Theory, and how they were just theories. And I just thought, you know, hundreds of thousands of kids are getting taught this, but there's no evidence. They're just theories. And I just thought, this is ridiculous. There is no way that I want to base my life on what some dude at a university says. There's no way. I want evidence. And I walked away from that science class just thinking, yeah, I'm going to pursue the facts. And I started to read my Bible, and you can probably guess where I ended up. And I won't go on with that. But at the end of the day, we're all intellectual, we're smart, we're creative, we want evidence, we want proof. We don't just want to follow anyone who just comes and says, yeah, I'm God. So point one. Point two, the proof Jesus gave this woman. So Jesus came about 2,000 years ago, a time like ours. Lots of religions. He lived in a very religious culture. And lots of people claimed to be the real deal, but weren't. And when Jesus came, he came completely different to everyone else. I don't know if anyone's seen the movie 300. Absolutely brilliant movie. But it's got a king in it called King Xerxes, king of Persia. And he comes with elephants and, you know, these guys who throw these magical bombs and lions and tigers and all this really cool stuff. And he just claims to be God, and he comes with all this pomp and power and just says, I am God, worship me. And everyone takes that for granted, that he's God before he's got all this power. Now, Jesus came in the complete opposite way to the way all the other religions came. Jesus was born in a town that no one had ever heard of. He was born to parents that no one had ever heard of. And for the first 30 years of life, no one knew much about him. He just lived his life, did his thing. He came silently, and he didn't talk, but he proved it. So let's look at how he proved it to this woman. Just before we go into the story, just give you a bit of background on this woman. not sure, it's quite a well-known story, I'm not sure what you know, but just give three things. First of all, this woman is incredibly independent and headstrong. I don't know if you know, you probably know a couple of women like this, but this woman is incredibly independent and headstrong. She's got five husbands, and she's shacking up with a guy at the moment who she's not married to, okay? And she's doing her own thing. Now, in today's age, you look at a woman who might have had five husbands, gone through five divorces, and you think, yeah, she, you know, she's got some commitment issues, you know, I don't really want to go there. You know, you might stay away or you might gossip about her or whatever. And today, we don't value marriage that much. You know, the divorce rate's heading towards one in two marriages divorce. Back in this day, 2,000 years ago, marriage was it. Divorce was almost unheard of. No one ever got divorced, okay? You would get set apart or engaged in your teens, so you get married between 16 to 18, and then you just stay with the same person your whole life. So very rarely was there divorce. So this woman was, she wanted satisfaction. She was pursuing something else for culture, and she was going completely against the cultural grain, just doing her own thing. Okay, and she's just been jumping from guy to guy to guy. And unfortunately for her, she's a social outcast. So she's been cast out, she doesn't have friends, no one wants anything to do with her, but she's independent, she's headstrong. Second thing, she is incredibly intelligent. She's a new age, modern woman, okay? She, today, we, men and women, you know, here at church, talk about religion, you can have a discussion. Back in those days, religion was for men, and women, it was, quite honestly, you know, cleaning sinks and making sandwiches and changing diapers. Okay, it was a very, very sexist culture. So women had next to nothing to do with religion unless their husbands taught them. Okay, and this woman, she knows a lot about religion. And she even has a religious debate with Jesus. What's even more fascinating is that Jesus proves to her that he's supernatural. And then she starts a religious debate with him. So Jesus comes in and she tells her his life story. And then she kind of steps back and goes, whoa, how did you know that I have five husbands? You're not supposed to know that. You're a Jew. How do you know that? You know, you must be a prophet. There's got to be something supernatural going on there. And then straight away, she starts a religious discussion with him. This is like if you saw Gandhi at the drink bubblers, and you're like, hey man, you know, I completely disagree with you, and I think that you're wrong just about everything. I'm a nobody, and I'm a cabinet maker, but yeah, I think that you're wrong. You know, it's just completely ridiculous. But someone to do that, very intellectual, very headstrong, doing their own thing, going their own way. And the third thing about this woman is that even though she is that way, she's still emotionally sensitive. She's still a woman. And the fact that she is outcast is, it really, okay, that was not again. Sorry, I'm not saying emotionally sensitive is not a bad thing. I cry all the time in the shower by myself, so it's not a bad thing. Hope you still have my respect after that comment. She's emotionally sensitive, and she cares deeply that she's a social outcast, okay? And she's hurt by that. And we see that, it's not going to make sense straight away, but she goes to get water during the middle of the day. All of us know that the middle of the day is the hottest part of the day. You know, sun's boiling down. No one walks their dog during the middle of the day. And all the women in that day would go to get water at dawn and dusk. And they'd all go together in a big group chat. She didn't have friends, didn't want to see the other women. She felt hurt. She knew that they were gossiping about her. So she went during the middle of the day where she didn't have to see anyone or talk to anyone or hear any abuse or anything. So she was emotionally sensitive. So now understanding a bit about her, how did Jesus actually prove himself to her? So Jesus told her her past. We just briefly touched on how this woman responded to him. You know, she stepped back and said, whoa, you know, that was crazy. Who are you? You must be a prophet. There's got to be something supernatural going on there. And even though she was a very intelligent woman, she knew that there was absolutely no way that Jesus could know her past. and yet he was able to bring it up and tell her. And you might think, well, hang on a sec, she's a social outcast, so everyone around her knows her past. Why wouldn't, you know, why is this supernatural? Why would Jesus not know her past? And just want to enlarge on something that Chris was saying before, just to go into a bit of background, of Jesus' background. Jesus was travelling from Jerusalem to Galilee, and it was going through Samaria. Okay, and so just put that in perspective, it's like Brisbane City walking to Caboolture. You've got to go through Kalanga. So it's about a two-day walk, 8 hours a day, it's about a two-day walk. Okay, now at that time, Kalanga, or Samaria, was right in the thick of it, and it was bum town. It was where the Darrows hanged out. It was the cultural low hub of the region at that moment. What happened was there were these people called the Jews, and they were incredibly religious people, incredibly proud people, and they were living around Kalanga and all the, you know, living in the region around there. And there were these people in Kalanga, in Samaria, who they weren't as religious as them. They didn't believe the same things. So all these Jews who were living around there, they looked down on these people and they hated them. They treated them as scum. They didn't want anything to do with them. They thought they were low lifes. And as Chris said, they never ever travelled straight through. They would always go way around. So they would either go Nudgee, Sandgate, Redcliffe, Dee Bay, or they would go Sanford, Daybra. But whatever they did, they would never ever ever go straight through. So the people in Kalanga or Samaria were completely separate to all of these religious Jews around them. And Jesus was brought up in this, as a Jew, he was brought up in this really religious society. So he wouldn't have known any of the Samaritans. He had nothing to do with them. He'd probably never even met one before. So we see that he had no idea about this woman before, and he proved himself, not with power, not with words, but just with action of just showing her that he knows her and that he knows her past. So, just point three. So just the last thing I want to say to you is that the proof Jesus gives us. Jesus doesn't want us to just read stories or fables. He doesn't just want us to read about him. He wants us to know him personally and intimately. Jesus knows that we're intelligent. He knows that we're creative. He knows that we're not just going to follow the first guy that rocks up and says that he's God. Jesus knows that we want proof. We want evidence. We want something tangible to base our lives on. And he knows that he's competing with 43,000 other religions. So what he did was, after he proved himself to this woman, he did miracle after miracle after miracle, just proof after proof after proof. Didn't say much, just did. So he healed a blind man, he's been blind all of his life. Healed a paralyzed man, very old man, everyone knew he was paralyzed, healed him. And one of the greatest things that he did is that he said, you know what, to prove to you for once and for all that I'm God, I'm not going to talk, I'm going to die on a cross, I'm going to get buried, and then 3 days later, I'm going to come back from the dead, who no one has ever done before. And he did. He died on a cross. He was buried. He was asleep for 3 days. And then he came back to life, and he showed himself to over 500 people. So Jesus wants to prove himself to us today. So we can read these things, and we can engage with Jesus now and know that he is true. Just something else I wanted to share is that there's more historical evidence and manuscripts to support Jesus or the reality of the truth that he was a person than for Xerxes or Ramses or Cleopatra or Herod or Plato or Hannibal or any other historical figure before the age of the printing press. There's more historical evidence for Jesus. So when we read this story about how Jesus told this woman her past. And when we read these stories about how Jesus turned water into wine and how he healed people and how he rose from the dead, we can trust that this is legitimate and that he proved himself to us. So I just want to ask you, what do you think? What do you make of that? You know, what do you base your life on? What's the foundation for what you believe in? What's the foundation for how you act? Is it proof enough for you, just this story, for you to go, yeah, Jesus is God? Sure, I want to know more about Christianity. Or do you want more proof? Do you want to read more about him? Do you want to investigate more into it? I'm not perfect, if you disagree with me tonight, man, please come up and say so. Don't say you're an idiot. I've got feelings and I get hurt really easily. So just be respectful in how you say things. But if you disagree, I'd love to just hear your story, and where you're coming from. I'd encourage you, even if you want nothing to do with God, I'd encourage you to have a read of this. It's called The Essential Jesus. It is, written by a guy called Luke. Luke lives back in Jesus' day. He was a white-collar doctor, and he did lots of investigation. He got eyewitness accounts. He had all these interviews with people, and then he figured out who Jesus was, what he said, what he did, and he put it into a short story. So that's the Gospel of Luke. So I'd encourage you, even if you don't want anything to do with God, at least if you read this, it'd take 2 to 3 hours, you'd know something about Jesus. You'd know at least who he was, what he claimed, and you'd be able to make an informed decision for yourself.